Okay, listen up, girlies. I've been meaning to shout out these queens for a minute. You gotta check out the pod Tres Leches. It is so fucking funny, and I'm obsessed with the hosts. You probably know all of them. It's Juan Torres Falcon, Johnny Sibley, Ian Padgett, and they're not only theater queens, but they're also super hot and honest, and they've got great guests on, like Mario Cantone just did the pod. So please show them some gay-ass love and go listen to Tres Leches, the pod.
That's a gay-ass podcast.
What? That's a gay-ass podcast.
A what?
A really, really, really gay podcast that we call That's a Gay-Ass Podcast.
That's a gay-ass name for a gay-ass podcast.
Welcome back to That's a Gay-Ass Podcast, the podcast that asks, whose fault is it that you're gay? It is me, Eric Williams, and happy goddamn Pride. We are bringing in Pride Month with a gorgeous guest. It is Marsha, who is sure a Drag Race absolute star from season 15, but is also a Broadway bitch. And you know, we love the Broadway bitches here. Marsha is in Cabaret on Broadway right now, playing Victor and understudying Orville Peck as the MC. But Marsha has gone on multiple times as the MC and has been with the show now for over a year. So a lot of great dish in this episode. I hope you enjoy the gorgeous Marsha. Hold a fucking phone. Marty Louder / Marsha is doing 8 shows a week, and yet you're here on That's a Gay Ass Podcast. Marty, isn't Cabaret exhausting? Why do you look so stunning on a Thursday?
Because I just filmed a self-tape.
She is still auditioning.
We have to. You can't have any gaps in the resume. You have to keep it pushing.
Well, because I'm a gay journalist, I don't want to know the title of the self-tape that you're auditioning for, but is it in the theater world? Is it TV film? What can you say?
This one was Theater Today.
Theater Today, Gone Tomorrow. Well, I love that you are such a theater queen. I think it's really interesting that, like, I get to talk to somebody who has the Drag Race herstory, but also the Broadway herstory, because the listeners know I am a very big theater queen through and through. So can I just ask you, you've been doing Cabaret for how long now? Like a million years. How is it feeling?
It's feeling good. I've never done a run of a show this long before. I've like toured before, which was extensive, but not, we just started our, like a couple months ago, we just started our second year. So I've been there since the jump as well. So it's feeling mostly good, but I'm finding that I'm having these like weird impulses during the show at times, like to do things that I've never in my life ever done. And I'm like, oh, that's not right. Focus.
Are you getting notes after the show? It's like, why did you say that random line from The Wizard of Oz?
No. I don't get notes.
And why would you, honey? The proof is in the pud. Well, it's so cool that you have done the show for so long now, because you really were a part of the cast with Eddie Redmayne, and there was all the Tony, you know, anticipation. And then, of course, I feel like when the Tony Awards come up, the big question is, A, will we win? And then B, will it give us the push we need to continue to run? And regardless of what happened, Cabaret is still... has not only legs, but incredible casting. I mean, the fact that you get to understudy the MC and actually go on a bunch.
Mm-hmm.
But what do we feel about the Tonys this year? I feel like it's the first time that I'm actually excited for, like, not knowing who's going to win.
So am I. I'm really, really excited. The only shows I've seen are Death Becomes Her and maybe Happy Ending. And I am so in love with both of them. I think it's been such a long time since we've gotten shows with cast recordings that you can actually listen to that like feel good in your ears.
I agree.
Like, we haven't gotten like really great, like new musicals in a long time. No offense to all of those shows that have opened in the last couple of years. But like, I'm listening to these cast recordings that I haven't done that like since high school. Like, it really is true. It feels nice to be like excited about theater in that way.
I know. Death Becomes Her's cast recording. I'm going to be honest with you. I saw the show and I was really, truly obsessed with it, but I didn't walk out being like, the music was my number one. For me, the number one was like the comedy, the Michelle Williams, the costumes, the sets, the physical gags. But now that I'm actually listening to it, I'm like, wait a minute. I'm now 15 years old. I'm in a car and I am lip syncing. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see if Jennifer Simard or Megan Hilty, what if there's a tie and they both win? Can you imagine?
I kind of hope so. Because, like, don't get me wrong, like, Audra and Nicole and Jasmine, I'm sure, are all giving, like, beautiful, lovely performances. But I think, and I'm always this person, I think it's so much harder to do musical comedy than it is to do drama. Mm. It's just so much harder. And because this is being so well received across, like, everybody, like, everyone I talk to, like, loves it. I'm like, this is, like, an objectively successful musical comedy. And it's a thing that we don't get a lot. And these two women are spearheading that effort in a way that I've never seen. And I love them both so much. And I want them both to win.
I do too. It's hard though, because like when you have such giants like Audra McDonald and then Nicole Scherzinger, I was very lucky. My last trip to New York, I got to see all of those shows. And I mean, they're obviously all giving like career defining performances. But I don't know. There's something about like, sure, the shows themselves that we're loving, but then the first time we're having real drama with the Tonys, I find to be like, again, like a throwback to the actual stakes of, because Broadway people, let's get something straight. We love theater, but I also think that controversies in the Broadway world are now on steroids because of A, social media, and B, like moody teenagers with access to social media. And so the whole like Patty versus Audra thing, I know would have been still big a decade or two ago, but I think it has exploded because of teenagers on the internet.
Sure, absolutely. That's how everything is.
The Patty versus Audra of it all. I mean, did you see that? Okay, so we're recording this on a Thursday. Did you see that Audra just responded?
No.
Yeah, so Audra just responded, which is the only reason why I'm asking about it, because it's so fresh on top of my mind. So basically, Audra just did an interview with Gayle King. And in her response to Patti LuPone saying that they're not friends, Audra said, "I haven't seen her in 11 years because we've just been busy with life." Whereas, you know, LuPone said she is not a friend. Hard D. So I don't know. I think Audra give a good, that's a bit of a shady nice but shady response. I think that's the only thing you can do.
Very classy. She just said, "This is the fact."
And read between the lines is, well, you obviously have such a theater history and such a gay history. So I'm going to ask you the famous podcast question, Marty. Whose fault is it that you're gay? Who do we blame, babe?
Who do we blame? I feel like I want to say Ariana Grande. The first Pride that I ever went to was the day that gay marriage was legalized. And I went, and I grew up on Long Island, so I went into the city with my friend, because also Ariana Grande was, it was on Ariana Grande's birthday, and she was performing in New York City, and I was like, maybe I'll run into her. So I was in, what? I don't remember how old I was. I must have been like end of high school, beginning of college. And I just went to Pride for the first time, and it was on her birthday, the day gay marriage was legalized. And I feel like it was like a total eclipse of the
gay heart. Well, that really makes a lot of sense that Ariana Grande shares a birthday with the legalization of same-sex marriage, because I was also at that New York Pride parade when gay marriage was legalized. I remember that moment. You know what's really devastating about my recollection of that day is I was obviously through, like, so excited. I was actually dating my now husband, so it's sort of a beautiful, like, you know, premonition that we were actually able to exercise our right. But I also found out that day I booked a show that ended up being one of the most harrowing experiences, which was How the Grinch Stole Christmas national tour. Thank you for asking.
Imagine.
It was tough. It was tough. But but Ariana Grande is someone that you actually have met, because when I did my research, I know that you are a huge Wicked stan, because how could you not? But you also have pics with Ariana Grande, with Bowen Yang, with what's can you give us the BTS of how that happened?
Sure. Well, I met Ariana at Drag Race. That was like the first.
Of course.
Um, And she was so sweet to me. And she thought I was really good, even though no one else did, which is really nice. And then we just like kind of kept in touch. And yeah, those pictures, that was from the SNL after party when she hosted this past year. I couldn't go to the actual show because I was, I had a show that night. But I went, but the party starts late. So I went afterward.
So you get out of cabaret, you have this, did she invite you to the party?
No, I weaseled my way in.
She's a go-getter.
Of course she is. I live in New York. Also, that's the thing with the SNL after parties. It's like everybody there was either at the show or they know somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody. And it all works out in the end. It all comes out in the wash.
That's really... have you always been able to feel that you belong at the SNL after party with Ariana Grande? Because that takes a certain je ne sais quoi. Were you born with that?
I think so. Yeah, some people would call it narcissism, but I just... I know where I belong and I'm going to be there.
No, see, I do think narcissism is getting its due these days because there are some of, you know, parents or artists or just monsters that we know that are narcissists through and through. But I really don't think that you people would call you that word, because I think there's a fine line between narcissism and just like sense of self / confidence. And I think that you're giving sense of self, like, you know, your worth.
I would say that as well, yes.
Is that because does homophobia exist on Long Island? I think it does, but did it for you?
It does, but like my whole life, I've been living in my own world. Like even when people would, like if kids at school would like say things that were not nice to me, I'd be like, okay, and I don't like you, so why do I care what you think of me? And I think that's kind of, that fueled the confidence almost.
Do you think that was, were your parents a part of just like champion you and your faggotry?
Yeah, they were always very supportive and very sweet. I didn't like come out to them. My coming out to them was like, oh, this is a person in my life that I care a lot about and I want you to meet them. And it was my current fiance.
When did you introduce them to the parents, your fiance to the parents?
It was like a couple of months into dating. We met this is like the gayest sentence in the world. We met because we were both in a regional production of Newsies in a summer stock. And
seize the day, bitch.
When we seized the day. And I went into the summer. I was like, I don't want to have any flings. I just want to focus on work. I don't want anything to get messy, whatever. And then lo and behold, that's when it happens. Always.
What theater was Newsies at?
It was a co-production with The Fulton, which started in May in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And then we transferred to Maine State Music Theater in Maine, in Brunswick, Maine. So it was it was like a contract that was like May to like the end of August. So it was really, really long. We spent like the whole summer together.
Well, that's a high stakes showman's, because because if it doesn't work out, you've got a long run. Did it start towards the beginning? Was it at the Fulton that you first canoodled?
But it was weeks and weeks in. I fought it off for a little bit and then I was like, fine, whatever. And here we are.
What would you say is your favorite thing about Kyle Samuel?
My favorite thing about Kyle, I think we balance each other very, very well. I am a very kind of like sporadic person. I follow my impulses very quickly and I'm at times overly emotional. And he is like very grounded and very like level-headed. He's very like book smart in a way that I am not. He's very like...
Yeah, I saw that he just graduated from, was it nursing school?
Nursing school, yeah.
So from performer to like full on joining the workforce, helping the girls. And God bless Kyle.
During the lockdown, he was like, I don't like that my money isn't consistent. I want to have a job that pays me all the time, that I always have a job. So yes, he went to nursing school with the goal of doing like aesthetics, like Botox and fillers and things. Also the gayest job you can have. but after like going through nursing school, he's realizing now that he actually likes like nursing, like properly nursing. I think it's his goal to be like a medical assistant for like plastics people. I think that's the goal for him, which is so cool.
It's so cool. I think that there's a lot of people who especially do theater, you know, when you see friends start to pivot to other industries, and then of course the whole question is, when did they quit? When it's all these words that sort of have a negative connotation. When the older that I have gotten and when I see people pivot, I find it to be like the most brave, strong thing to do, because you're valuing yourself and what you actually, how you want to live your life. And I think that theater can be great, but it's also not easy and not for everyone. And I think the more that people realize what they actually want versus what they think they wanted when they were 18 and they're just trying to keep with that, that's like a fucking sexy thing to do.
Absolutely. Like I, for example, I have no other skills. I'm bad at math. I'm bad at science. I don't retain information very well.
Listen, you and I have a similar thing, which is that we are not smart, but we also are very passionate and creative. And I think impulsive is a good word. But what is your, then what are you manifesting for? Since your journey has been so interesting with doing Drag Race, getting this big platform as a drag queen, but now having a really exciting Broadway career, are you, when people ask you about your kind of priority list when it comes to performing, is drag being knocked down, or does it still have, does it have like an equal footing to your theater life?
I think they're very different things. Like for a long time, what I would get frustrated about in theater is that I like to be in charge of things. And I like, I'm a very tactile person. Like I love learning tactile skills. That's why I love sewing. I love anything that I can like do with my hands. So drag fulfills a very like different part of my brain, where like musical theater at times can feel frustrating for me, because I'll be like, why is this step this way? Why is this costume this way? Why is that one this way? And I want to fix it. I want to change it, but it's not my place. And I have to like hold myself back, which is hard, where with drag, I'm in charge of everything and I get to build it all myself. And that is the really exciting part about it for me. So I wouldn't say that it's knocked down. Like I go where the money, the opportunity, the inspiration lies. Like I was planning on leaving cabaret after the first year. But I was just really enjoying it, especially like the MC performances. That was something that I like, even in like college, I never thought that would be part of my life. I was like, oh, I'm a dancer, I'll do that until I can't dance anymore, and then I'll do something else, whatever. So getting to experience like the confidence that I've found, and like the, again, the amount of control that I have over that role has been really, really exciting and really fulfilling. And it was something that I wasn't ready to kind of let go yet. So I was like, also Trump is in office and I don't want to be unemployed. So I was like, I'm going to stay for as long as I can, and then we'll jump ship when the time comes and like when the right thing.
100%. It makes so much sense. And I think the fact that you are going on as the MC is something that you should feel not only proud of, but just like so empowered by, because to lead any show is hard. To lead a Broadway show is even harder. And then to lead a Broadway show that is known for star casting, I think adds a certain level of pressure, because let's not get it twisted. You are performing with people that have been either on Broadway or in giant films, Oscar winners. I mean, it's really next level when it comes to pressure. When you auditioned for Cabaret, was the audition, so you're going in for Victor / the MC understudy, or did the understudy role come as the team got to know you?
It came as they got to know me, yeah. So the reason I auditioned for Cabaret in the first place, it was like, so our season 15 started airing in January. And by the time I got to August with like all of the touring and everything, I was like, I cannot do this for much longer, because you get very lonely, because you're traveling alone to a place that you've never been. You're getting picked up by like a stranger at the airport. You're getting into drag. You're getting to a bar and like meeting 100 different people. And then you fly out the next morning.
Right.
And then there were times or weekends that I'd be like in one city on Friday, one city on Saturday, one city on Sunday, and then I'd fly home. And I was just feeling like so burnt out and so tired and so lonely and like sad. And like, I've never been in my whole life like a sad person. And I talked to my team. I was like, I can't do this like this for much longer. I need to like do something else. And I feel like I miss theater and I want to see if I can do that again. And I was like, these are the shows that I'm interested in. What do you got? And they were like, oh, well, Cabaret is auditioning next week for like the dance call is next week. Do you want to go? And I was like, sure. So they got me into that, which is like how I would always do it, even like before Drag Race. I would just be like, they'd be like, oh, we have an invited dance call for this show. Do you want to go? And I'd be like, sure. So I went to that. And then I was like kept to sing whatever. And then they called me back for the next week and they wanted to see the MC material. And I was like, okay, great. Let's learn some German. but yeah, it was so exciting. Like I don't think ever in my career been asked to like come in and like do a bunch of material. It's always been like dance call back. Can you sing? Great. Fantastic. Moving on.
You know what? The whole thing that I love about that story is that you fucking said, I'm burnt out. I'm sad. What can I do? And then the universe D-Live heard that it's like the same thing with the fucking SNL party. You're just like, I want to be there. And so I'm going to figure out a way. And what would you say was the loneliness factor of the Drag Race touring? Was it because you had no roots in terms of like a home situation? What was there? Because I'm sure there's two sides to it. There's probably like a loneliness, but also like a camaraderie with the other queens. Were the other queens feeling the same way, do you think?
I'm sure a lot of them were. Drag Race is like a very singular, specific experience. And the year afterward, it's just like so busy. It's like unbelievable.
Yeah,
the loneliness, it truly came from like, also like, so when I would come home, when I wasn't working over the weekend, like Kyle had a job. So like, I wouldn't see Kyle all day and then I'd be alone all weekend. And there's just something about being around so many people and not knowing any of them, like constantly. And everyone you're talking to is just like, oh my gosh, it's so nice to meet you. I love you on the show. And it's like, okay, thank you so much. That's very nice of you. But it's like, past that, like I wasn't seeing my friends a lot. I wasn't seeing my partner a lot. I was, again, like alone in hotel rooms for like hours on end, or I was flying to the place. It's just, it's very isolating. And like, obviously the really big girls can like bring an assistant with them, which is like something that I think would make it a lot better. But
just because you could kiki with the assistant?
Yeah, just because like you, it's like he's like a friend of yours. And it's like, oh, I have like a person like travel with and a person to talk to and a person to help me get ready. Yeah.
It's probably why some queens, I feel like the year after Drag Race, like there are so many different trajectories that you see. I mean, the fact that Sasha Colby did so well on the show and then continues to slay is no surprise to me. I think she is one of like our living legends. I think that your season had some really, really great personalities and talents. And I'm going to be honest with you. The last season of Drag Race, I just didn't feel super emotionally invested in, and it's no shade to those queens. I think a lot of it is just like there can be fatigue for some of us gays in our 30s and 40s who have been watching every season. And then when you get to like season 42, you're like, well, and I start to sound like an old faggot when I'm like,
these queens haven't been through anything. They're 22 and their parents love them.
But like, I think that's partly what led to the postseason insanity of Arietti versus Irene. Something tells me that like she like wasn't fully seeing reality when she had her retort, because Irene, I think, gave shade. I think Irene was leaning into shade. And my feeling is that some of the newer queens, or just some queens in general now, are finding a tough line between shade and defamation. Like, don't you think, like, the library is open, so it's supposed to be shady and fun, not you are a pedophile.
Yeah, I don't think, and like even like her response to saying that, she was like, oh, they were just like jokes. I was like, you don't jokingly publicly call a person a pedophile and a racist. It's just not.
No.
And I cannot speak to her experience on the show and what the people have been saying to her. I'm sure it's been absolutely terrible. And that is enough to kind of make anybody make some less than favorable decisions.
Yeah.
Because like even I had it easy. I just had people tell me I wasn't wearing enough makeup for a year. And that was driving me a little crazy. Something about like reading the same thing about yourself over and over and over again. That is just like, it's like the definition of insanity. Like you're.
Of course.
It's truly like such a, it's such a mind fuck. So the fact that, like, I'm not surprised that she like in a way is like lashing out like this because like she doesn't know. I don't think she knows that like anything she says is going to get villainized. So she's just right. Like, I'll just say whatever I want and it's going to be the same. But I think she realized maybe this was a little bit too far.
Well, it's I think it's also too like there's a difference between shading a queen at a bar versus doing it on Twitter when then it's going to be like live on. And I think that that's probably a hard lesson that she learned. But were you talking to any of the other Rue girls about when that controversy hit? I mean, is there like chatter about like, can you believe this is?
With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Whether you're looking to buy your dream home or rent a sweet apartment, give Redfin your gotta-have-it wish list of property features, and you'll receive real-time notifications tailored just for you. Ready to see it up close and personal? Scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Don't wait to find your perfect match. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.
Happening?
Not really. I think in those situations, especially when it gets as like severe as it got, it's best to just let them deal with it. Cause like any mention of it is going to be something emotionally charged or like
right.
Triggering or anything. And it's not obviously our place to be like, so why did she say that? What happened? You know what I mean? I mean, totally. I know that all of us on season 15 are very supportive of Irene and we're so excited to see her on the season. And it's obviously when you read something like that, you're like, what? But to see that she kind of took it back so quickly, I think is telling about the reality of the situation.
And Irene did the right thing, which was
don't say anything at all.
Don't say a damn thing. Well, you tweeted something about Drag Race that I was interested in. You said the All-Stars itch really creeps up on you.
Marsha.
Care to explain?
So like watching season 16, I didn't even finish the season. I stopped like halfway through. I was like, I can't do this.
Yeah.
And then this year, with season 17, we were watching it like as a cast a lot. We would like go to someone's apartment after the show and watch it. So that like kind of like got me like warmed back into it. And now I'm watching All Stars and it's so many queens that I love so much that I work with a lot.
Yes.
And you just, because I think after you do it, you're like, I'd never want to be there ever again. Don't ask me. Don't go near me. I'm done.
It's like childbirth.
Yes. And then after a little while, you're like, oh no, like that's actually, it could be like a fun thing to do. Fine. I'll think about it. Because I know I would go back and I would do so well and they'd be like, oh,
I think
you're
would.
So talented and I'd win $100,000 to $200,000 and that'd be great.
If you find your bank account, let's just pretend that you get all of those 200Ks and there's no taxes involved, or like management, whatever. You get $200,000 in your account. Are you taking your fiance on a gorgeous vacation? Are you investing in property? What are we spending the money on?
Ooh, property is definitely up there for sure.
Is she doing Manhattan or is she going for a vacation moment? What is she doing?
Well, I recently moved to New Jersey.
Shout out.
Because we needed room. Because Marsha is a third roommate and New York City apartments are really small. So I think what I would want to do is I want to live in Manhattan still. But I want to live in Manhattan in an apartment that I can actually live in.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like cramped or anything like that. So that's the goal, is to find an apartment in New York City, in Manhattan, in a neighborhood that I like, that's big enough that I can afford.
Yeah. What's like a dream neighborhood?
I lived on, I lived on the Upper West Side last year because Kyle was in school and I was starting UCLA. And so he was going to school on Long Island. So he was living with my parents for the last year, which I think is so funny. So I was like, I'm going to get a studio close to the theater so I can just, you know, have an easy year. If I'm going to be all by myself, I'm going to have like an easy commute, whatever. And I loved living in the Upper West Side. I was at like 73rd and Columbus. It was just like the idyllic New York City. So I'm trying to get rich and famous and buy a beautiful apartment, a beautiful two bedroom on the Upper West Side. And
I see it happening. I really do.
It's just a matter of time.
And I've said to my friends, because I was in New York for 13 years, moved to LA because I just needed the space and was, you know, I needed the change. But I will move back to New York if I make the Andy Cohen level of money. That's where I'm at because,
sure.
I don't know, there's living in New York as a rich person feels very different from living in New York as everybody else.
Oh my God, it really does.
What is your dream manifestations about theater work? I mean, you of course did the Hello Dolly tour, you did Kinky Boots on Broadway. Let's say, for example, your obsession with Wicked. If Wicked wanted you to join the Broadway cast, yay or nay?
I would absolutely do it. I went, like, when I first moved to New York City, it was the job that I was like, oh, if they cast me in Wicked, I would literally never leave. I would stay there until I died. I would love to. I have this horrible, horrible curse that I'm too tall to be Bach, but I'm too gay to be Fiero. And there isn't like a third one. You know what I mean?
I think that's going to be the name of your memoir.
Probably. Because like, would I not be the most adorable Bach in the world?
You would be a great. How tall are you?
I'm 6 foot.
Fuck.
I'm like multiple inches too tall.
Fuck.
And I could mask it up and like roid out for
you,
a little bit.
You posted yourself singing Dancing Through Life and you sounded Gorgine.
The material is there. It's just the box that it's in is just a little bit wrong for them, I think.
But don't you think we deserve a faggy Fiero?
I think so, 100%. Yes. I think that's everybody.
Rebel with schools is.
Every single character in Wicked is gay.
I feel like Bach especially is like, I don't know. There's something about a short man that just sounds gay to me.
A short man that is obsessed with a pretty blonde girl? Yeah. Please. Oh, God, I'd love to be Bach, but I'm too tall. Unless they get a really tall Glinda one day, maybe. Who knows? A statuesque, like, model Glinda.
Would you go for an ensemble role in Wicked?
That's the thing. We're at a kind of a turning point in the career. Now that we have the MC coverage under the belt, there is like an impetus that I can handle something larger.
Yes.
So I'm not sure at this juncture it would be the smartest decision, but that's the thing. I love that show. I would definitely consider it.
Are you going to go see when they replay Wicked in theaters? They're going to show the first one and then they're going to play the trailer for the second one?
Everyone at Cabaret has been asking me if I'm going to this. I think it's on like a Thursday. As soon as they said it, I was like, what day is this? And it's like a Wednesday or a Thursday. And
like afternoon, like, right?
Or is it? I have work.
Yeah.
And I shouldn't like call out to do that. I have Wicked at home. And it's gonna be on TikTok the second someone's gonna live stream it. You know what I mean? Like
the only reason I wanna see that and I do have tickets is because there's something about seeing that movie in theaters that like
it's amazing.
It's almost like the feeling when you're hooking up with someone that you can't believe you're hooking up with. Like you're firing on all cylinders, you feel so lucky to be there. How did I get in? That's sort of what it feels like to feel the surround sound of a Dolby Max.
I think I saw Wicked. I think I saw it 5 times when it came out. I saw it early before it opened because Ari asked me if I wanted to go. And I was like, are you kidding me? Please. I've sold anything in the world. I did call out of my show for that. I got a personal day approved the day before because she asked me. She's like, do you want to do this tomorrow? And I was like, yes. And I like called my stage manager and I was like, I can't be there tomorrow. I'm so sorry.
What's that with big, a huge smile?
It was a huge opportunity. So I saw Wicked. Yeah, that was the first time And then I went to the New York premiere, which is on my birthday, which again, Ari got me into, the sweetest person on the planet. And then I saw it with my cabaret company. I saw it in IMAX and I saw it in 4D.
Did bubbles come out of the screen?
Not bubbles, but they spray you with water and the seats move and stuff. It was literally, it was hilarious.
The wizard and...
it was funny. I saw it with my best friend from cabaret, David Marino. And we were sitting in the theater with like four other people and we were laughing so hard. Anytime this seats would move... It was hilarious.
Who do you think is the person who is doing the chair design of the movements? Like, it's either going to be the gayest man you've ever seen or the straightest tech nerd who doesn't understand when to move the chairs and it's at the least opportune times.
I think it might have been a bisexual because the times were correct. But there's no way that they were a straight man.
Yeah, you're right. There's at least, the person has sucked at least one dick.
At least one.
Do you ever wish you were bisexual?
I don't know. Maybe. I mean, a lot of the time I see the way that women are treated in relationships and that makes me sad. I was like, oh, I love women so much and I could probably make someone really happy, but...
Okay, so this is interesting that you're saying this. I was in Palm Springs for Memorial Day weekend and I was at a gay pool hang and we were talking about the bars the night before. And there is absolutely the situation we face with bachelorette parties going to the gay bars because obviously straight men are garbaggio. And God forbid these women don't want to be assaulted. So they go to a different bar and bless them for that. The question though is how do we as a queer community feel about our spaces being our spaces and thanking the girlies who've been good to us, but also not feeling like they're taking over. Like there were people were talking about being in a dark room and then there were girls just walking around taking it all in. Like that, there's a nuance that I think is kind of interesting right now.
I think if there's a space that is a dark room, if there's a space that is for sex, there's no reason you should be in there if that's not what you're doing.
Right.
You know what I mean? But yeah, I mean, women have been my muses, my protectors, my best friends my whole life. So I am down with the ladies in the gay bars 100%. But I think it's the same of any situation, though. If you are acting inappropriately in a space, don't be there.
Exactly.
And I think most women are... lovely in queer spaces.
Before I get into another famous podcast question, your drag name, Marsha, 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 is just so delicious. But do you have a Brady Bunch connection or what is the origin story of Marsha, Marsha, Marsha?
The origin story of Marsha, Marsha, Marsha is that I was doing a summer stock contract again in Minnesota, in Minneapolis. There's not much to do. So I would sit in my housing and I would watch movies and I was watching the Brady Bunch movies. And I said, oh my gosh, I love Marsha Brady. She's, what's her name? Christine Taylor, who does it in the movies.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She is my favorite part of those films. I think she is so funny and beautiful and talented and hilarious. And, I was like, oh my gosh, Marsha, Marsha, Marsha is such a good drag name. Because I love the queens with three names. Like I love Nicole Page Brooks is just like hilarious. That's so funny to me. I was like, oh my gosh, what if it was all three of the names? And then it ties in with the little thing. I just thought it was really smart and clever and it articulates well what I like to do with drag, I think, as well.
I think I identified a lot as a Jan growing up, just like, you know, I felt like the freak in my family a lot. And like, I think a lot of theater kids feel that way, but like there is something so satisfying about seeing Marsha, Marsha, Marsha strut down a goddamn runway.
I think it's fun. My drag person has always been like, you know, like a queen bee kind of girl. Definitely. I think like teetering the bridge of like what you're saying, like, oh, I don't know if she's going to be mean to me or not. I think there's a real power in that if you make people a little uncomfortable.
I one day aspire for people to worry that if I'm mean or not. I think I showed I put my heart on my sleeve too much, but like it is such a delicious power. And another way that we yield our delicious power on That's a Gay Ass Podcast is by asking about character actresses, Marsha. So let me ask you the famous podcast question. If the world was ending, you could only save one character actress. Who would you save?
Okay. TV, film, the first person that came to mind, like the first person I thought of was Melissa McCarthy.
Oh, yes.
I think there's a really beautiful versatility to her that she does, in fact, inhabit. She doesn't, like, she's not just a character actress. She can be, but she's also, like, a great singer. And she is. Can also do other things as well. But, like, I have now that you're saying it, there's, like, a million. Like,
but
Kristen Wiig and Palm Royale.
Of course.
Kristen Wiig.
But that's it. I was just going to bring up Kristen Wiig for a second because there's a clip that just resurfaced recently with Melissa McCarthy. I believe Kristen Wiig is up there. Amy Poehler, Edie Falco. It's when they're all nominated for either an Emmy Award or a Golden Globe or something like that. And when they announce all of the nominees, every single woman gets up from her chair, walks up the stairs, stands on stage, and they're all sort of like having a camaraderie together. And that to me is like a dream. Actually, I'm a little ashamed to admit that I did get to audition for Palm Royale, and it would have been a scene where I would have improvised with Kristen Wiig.
Oh, fantastic. And
I did not end up getting this part, but I at least got to dream of the fact that I would be keeking with character actresses improvising on a set one day, baby.
Also, Janelle James.
Abbott Elementary.
She is, when I think of like my favorite sitcom characters of all time, she is there for me.
I am inspired by Janelle's like comedy beginnings into like living the dream of being a television star in a show that hopefully will never end.
It won't. It can't, actually, is the reality. It cannot end.
Do you think Quinta Brunson is a character actress?
I was going to say, when you asked me this question, I feel like there are that line is becoming more blurred. We're allowing women to be more dimensional, which I absolutely love.
Yeah, which there's certain words that have, to some people, negative connotations. My examples, character actress, some people think that that's like a limiting thing, that they're only able to play wackadoo characters, which I don't think is the case. The other sort of word that people put negative connotations on is the word slut. I think that being a slut these days actually just means that you are in touch with the sexy, sultry side of you. And it doesn't mean that you are nasty or bad, because sometimes I'll say to someone like, are you a slut? And sometimes they'll like step back as if I'm insulting them, but it's like, no, it's more of like, are you just able to live into your horny bliss? That's what I really mean by that.
Sure, absolutely.
And a character actress is the people who can show their multitudes. And I think that, why don't we say Quinta Brunson is a character actress? Because she gives us versatility, and character actresses are the people the women that I bowed down to in Hollywood.
Like I said, comedy's harder than drama. Oh my gosh, Jane Krakowski.
Oh, yeah.
Jane Krakowski too. God, there's so many.
That Jane Krakowski is the genius blend of musical theater icon and TV comedy icon.
Let me tell you. Bam.
When I saw her in She Loves Me do the full split and then get dragged across the ground.
Mm-hmm. Amazing.
I do find myself, last week on the podcast, we talked about Jessica Lange and being a little afraid of her. I am, out of all the women we've named, I'm the most afraid of Jane Krakowski.
And that's why I love her so much. I think she's so brilliant. So Death Becomes Her. I think the first replacements, I think Jane Krakowski should play Madeline.
Yes.
I think Renee Elise Goldsberry should play, what's her name? Helen.
She stole my life.
She made me. Yeah, no, that is inspired casting. That's the type of show, I mean, it's kind of similar to Cabaret, where like you're just like waiting to see who is going to be able to fill the shoes of the previous person. And I think that, and also like Death Becomes Her obviously will tour, and so whoever's going to do the tour, I'm going to excited to see. It's what an interesting, I don't know, the whole Broadway thing is just so interesting, because I feel like it's, the shows either make no money or a ton of money and have a life like Cabaret has had, or, you know, the Tonys are going to happen in, what, like a week or two, and then a million shows are going to close. It's just like, you know, before we end the interview, I just want to like kind of full circle with the Cabaret of it all. What is it like now going into another Tony season, not having to worry? Does it feel like, what does it feel like being a part of the community and yet you're still not like feeling the as high of stakes about the Tonys as you might have last year?
I mean, I definitely wasn't like worried about the Tonys last year. Yeah. Just because like, it's not like there was like an ensemble award or like,
right.
And like none of the covers had gone on yet. Like, yeah, it was very, I don't know. Like it was, I was proud to be in the show, period. When I saw the show in the West End, and like when I was traveling after Drag Race, like in that March. So like, yeah. The Broadway transfer hadn't been announced yet. I just love Cabaret and I knew this production was really, really cool and I wanted to see it. So I went with my fiance and funnily enough, I saw the victor and I went, oh, that's my track. The blonde in heels, that would be me. And then sure enough. But yeah, I was just so excited to be there. The fact that we got to perform on the Tonys, the fact that I got to do my kick on the Tonys, I was like, this is just like a dream come true. This is a moment that is going to live on the internet forever, at the very least. I was just happy to be there, truly. And this year, I don't know, it feels like the Super Bowl. I'm just excited. I want my faves to win, and we'll see what happens. I'm also still very upset that Helen J. Shen was snubbed. That's my one qualm with the Tonys this year.
Tough year, man. Tough year.
Oh, good, though.
Ugh. I haven't seen Maybe Happy Ending, so I obviously need to.
Everyone says this, and it's ironic because it's about robots, but it's such like a human story. It's about how like our relationships affect us, and just like in really simplistic ways, and really big ways. It deals with like grief and all these. It's just like so beautiful, and the score is so, it's like I listen to it on loop. I love it so much.
Do you, are you listening to Maybe Happy Ending or Death Becomes Her more?
Ooh, I think Maybe Happy Ending. It's more of like I feel like it encompasses more. I feel like Death Becomes Her is kind of, you know,
should I listen to Maybe Happy Ending if I haven't seen it?
Listen to like half of it.
Okay.
Okay. You don't want it to be spoiled.
That's okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Like listen to like the first third.
Okay. Like, that's good. That's good advice. Well, listen, Marty, I have been a fan of yours since Drag Race and I am so inspired by your multidisciplinary abilities. It is so fucking hard, like you said, to be able to land comedy, to be able to do drag, to make your own fucking fashion and have that identity as a performer in drag, and then to go into a Broadway show and lead it. It is so unbelievable. And I just want to give you snaps and say mazel tov for all that you've done and all that you will continue to do as we manifest your future. So thank you for coming on. That's a Gay Ass Podcast. It's been such a fucking delight. Will you tell the listeners where they can follow you and where they can see Cabaret?
Sure. Well, you can follow me on all social media at MarciaX3NYC. You can come see Cabaret at the Kit Kat Club at the August Wilson Theater, now renamed the Kit Kat Club for temporary purposes.
Sure.
And
sure.
I'll also, I'm not sure if it's been posted yet, but I'll say it because I'm doing a concert at the Laurie Beachman Theater on July 14th at 9:30 p.m. We have some very special guests. I'm very excited.
Oh, hell yeah.
I've weaseled a lot of people that are too important to be in that show
Oh my God, that's so exciting. You said July 14th?
July 14th, 9:30 p.m., the Laurie Beachman Theater.
Okay, Bastille Day at the Laurie Beachman Theater. Fucking Marsha giving us cabaret realness with special guest dresses. Okay, well, I'm linking it all in the description. Look out for tickets for that. Go follow Marty. Go see cabaret and stay slaying. You're such a fucking star.
I'm going to try.
Thanks for listening to That's a Gay Ass Podcast with me, Eric Williams, and our stunning guest, Marsha. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you're subscribed on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify, or if you're watching on YouTube, thank you so much, and click like to let that stupid fucking algorithm know we are here and we are queer. If you want more bonus episodes, you can watch a full video episode with Tuna Salad Nick, one of my biggest Instagram crushes of all time. And he delivers. Substack.com/@EricWills. He talks about nipple stuff, a cruising Portland naked moment, and it's just so good. Substack.com/@EricWills. And I'll see you next week for another Pride Month gay ass ep.
Bye.
You've been listening to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, hosted by me, Eric Williams. If you want to see and hear more, make sure you're subscribed to us on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Spotify, Apple Music, or Patreon at Gay Ass Podcast. That's a Gay Ass Podcast is executive produced by Eric Williams and produced by Nathaniel McClure. We'll see you next week.